You are listening to KDUCK's Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Prunk, the presenter of the Prunk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUCK's, Richland College, or the DCCD. Today will be another short show. And I want to alert you, the school will be closed, so all students and staff probably know this. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, the campus will be shut down for Easter and the spring break during those 3 days. So no point coming to campus. All the buildings will be shut tight, locked down, starting Friday. Because of that, my Friday show obviously is canceled, but we'll have my Thursday show will be the long show. And when I say long, it'll be the regular two-hour show. So I wanted to alert you to that. Now, today I'm going to have both an update and an expansion of a story that I really covered last week because something really did develop during the weekend. And that was the Nevada rancher that had his cattle grazing on government land. And according to the Bureau of Land Management, owed them over $1 million in grazing fees. Now, this gentleman stopped paying it over 20 years ago. And since then, he's been in his family. They've had a ranch since the 1880s in Nevada. And remember, the Bureau of Land Management didn't really come into existence until into the 1930s. I think it was 1934. I might be wrong on the date, but about then. And for many, many years, really decades, ranchers, and there used to be a lot of ranchers in that area, used to graze their cattle not only on their own ranches, but also on land owned by the government. Because most of the land in Nevada, over 80%, it's about 84%, between 84 and 85% of the land in Nevada, the state of Nevada, is owned by the federal government, quite high. And that's typical of many of the western states. It's going to vary, and I talked about it on a previous show, but what happened over the weekend? And this somewhat surprised me. The Bureau of Land Management backed down, and I think that was a smart thing to do. And why did they back down? Was it because of this rancher? No, it's because all over the state, as well as out of state, people flocked to this area to give support to the rancher, and they came armed. And you could see it on the video. These people were packing. They had weapons. Now they can do that legally if they have a concealed carry and some I don't know in Nevada what the I know they have concealed carry but in some states I know in Arizona it's open carry as well. So you had a number of people showing up to demonstrate and support the rancher, and it could have easily resulted in violence if tempers do flare. I think even the Bureau of Land Management knew that this could be a very dangerous situation, not only for the people coming, but also for their own officers. So they decided to do two things. One, and remember, they supposedly had over 200 federal employees there, as well as some contractors that were rounding up the cattle. So there was a lot of people on the federal government side, and they were trying to round up around 300 head of cattle. And last time, it looked like they had rounded up several hundred, but they decided to back out and release the cattle and back down on that. Now, why did this happen? And why suddenly this year did they do this? I don't know. I have some suspicions, speculations, but I really don't know why they tried to make an issue of it here. And it was becoming really a bad publicity situation for the Bureau of Land Management. Now, why do I say that? Well, north of Nevada is Utah, and the Bureau of Land Management has responsibility for a program. It's called the Wild Horse and Burro Program. And before I forget, the way you listen to the Pop Show, if you're not listening right now, why it's streaming over the internet is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And at the very top, you'll have links to my past shows. But underneath that, you'll have my notes. And it's not my notes. It's information I've collected, both graphics, photos, charts, and I have a lot of charts on this one, and some interesting photos, cartoons, and information. And I'm going to link this to the food situation in a minute, because I'm sure if you do your own grocery shopping, you have found that milk prices, beef prices in particular, bread, cereal, food prices in general have been going up for now several years. And this year it's estimated on average it'll be about somewhere between 2 and 3.5%. But that's not what I'm saying. I've seen milk prices go up from $2 to now it's at $3. So people are looking for specials. And I do go to a discount place where it costs me $2.59 a gallon. And I can remember when it was under $2. So milk prices have gone up. Bread prices have gone up. You could still get a loaf of bread if you shop for about $1, both wheat and white, but you can't get the fancy breads. Most of them are hot, much higher than that. So you need to shop around, and that's the only way you're going to really stay within a budget, because food prices across the board are going up. But the big increases in beef prices, and there's a couple of reasons for that. Namely, the drought in certain part of the country is making plant life scarce. You know, where you have a severe drought, that kills the plants and the grass that the beef cattle need to eat. So what's happened over the last several years is ranchers have reduced the size of their herds. And the herd is now the smallest it's been since the early 1950s, when the U.S. population was really about half of what it was today. So don't be surprised if you go out for fast food, whether it's a hamburger, chicken as well has gone up. Prices are going really through the roof. They're skyrocketing. Now, how is this related to the wild horse story? The Bureau of Land Management has a number, and they call it, and there's a name for this, and I have a little chart that it's a little dated, but it really does show you, it's about 2 years old, shows you the wild horse and burro herd population and it's called the AML, the appropriate management level. Don't you love that term? That is the number the Bureau of Land Management, or the government, says this is the appropriate level or number of horses you should have in an area such as a state. Now, I have a chart by state: Arizona, California, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, Oregon, Utah, and Wyoming, where this program is. And the AML in round numbers is about 27,000. That's what the Bureau of Land Management, which is part of the U.S. Department of the Interior, is saying is the appropriate level or number of horses you should have total. Now, today, how many horses do you think there are in those states total? It's over 40,000, over 40,000. In other words, there's about 13,000, at least 13,000 horses in excess of what the government is saying is the appropriate level. And that's about 50%, not quite, but it's right around 50% more than the Bureau of Land Management is saying you should have. And ranchers are complaining, why? What do these horses do? They eat a lot of food, and they trample over the plants. And there's a reason for that, the appropriate management level, because when you exceed that level, what happens is you run out of plant life. It's no longer green. That's how you can tell. And it's really instructive to see where the cattle are grazing and where the ranchers are making sure it's not overgrazed. It's green. You can look at a video that shows it. The cattle grazing areas, because they rotate, the ranchers rotate, because they know you can't just leave cattle in one space and expect the plant life to survive. They won't. So they move the cattle periodically so that doesn't happen. And as a result, your plant life is surviving and growing and prospering on the area where cattle ranchers are herding their cattle. Conversely, if you look on the other side of the fence where the horses are running wild, what do you see? You don't see green because you have too many horses and they're eating anything they can. So you have an excess population of horses of over 13,000. And it's probably closer to 15,000. No one knows the exact number because every day there's horses being born. And you need to understand the population of horses tends to double every 4 years. 4 to 5 years, it tends to double. So and get bigger and bigger. So what are the ranchers demanding? They're demanding that the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, do its job. Have a roundup and sell these horses. Now, what's the problem? These are wild horses. They're not pets, folks, and you're probably not going to tame them. So they use helicopters as well as cowboys to round up the cattle, put them in a feedlot, try to sell them off. But why they're in the feedlot, they need to feed them. That's why it's called a feedlot, and that's costing you and me money. They will use a lot of feed just to survive. So if they're not in the wild and they're on the feedlot, that's money you, every taxpayer, is paying. They should sell these horses abroad because there's not much demand in the United States for them. You do have demand for them, for example, in Mexico, across the border, and also in China and other countries. And some of them are going to be butchered for horse meat, and some of them are going to hopefully be tamed. And if they can't tame them, they're going to butcher them. Now, why is this important? With beef prices skyrocketing, you want the cattle ranchers across the country to have access to government land to graze their cattle. In other words, instead of trying to round up cattle for ranchers in Nevada, the roughly 300 head, and have 200 people with helicopters and trucks and trailers, they should be doing their job across the country, starting in Utah, and eliminating. In Utah, it's estimated there are over 2,000 excess horses that need to be rounded up. And that is the job of the Bureau of Land Management. And they should be doing their job. Instead of showboating and getting publicity, now bad publicity, and rounding a rancher's cattle. See, I have mixed feelings about this rancher because other ranchers have paid the fees. But at the same token, his family was here, and the ranch has been his family since the 1880s. And what has happened over time, as the Bureau of Land Management has been more restrictive and raised his fees, more and more of the ranchers in that area have moved away. They've closed shop. They can't make a living at it. And remember, about 84% of the land is owned by the federal government. It's government-owned land or public land. Now, what I said in that last show is what the federal government should do, since it has a deficit of over $17.4 trillion and growing every day by billions, is to auction off this land. Give some of it to the states, but most of it have an auction and sell it to private individuals for them to develop. Now, you need to understand this. The land in Nevada, it's, for lack of a descriptive term, it's godforsaken. It's desert, folks. There's not much out there. And so if you can graze cattle, by all means do. The more the merrier. Now, you need to have some limits because you don't want to have happen what's happening in Utah, where the wild horses are overgrazing the area. So I'm glad the spotlight was turned on Nevada and what the government was doing there. And I'm also glad the people came from Nevada as well as Utah and other states to give the rancher support. And I hope he gets his cattle back. But that's a short-term situation. What really needs to be done is the sale of most, not all, but most of the federal land. Because the federal government typically owns between 40 and over 80% of the land in the western states. And I have a number of maps showing that. And it's not just the Bureau of Land Management. You also have national parks. You have Indian reservations. You also have national forests. But I'm just saying the land that's managed by BLM should be sold off. And I really don't think the Bureau of Land Management is doing a good job, especially when you have an excess of 13,000 wild horses above their own limits, and then you have an additional over 50,000 horses in feedlots. All of this is costing you money, folks. I know many of you are filling out your tax returns. Here's where your money goes to. Isn't this special? The government needs to get out of the real estate business. That's not its function. Now, what's happening is a lot of environmentalists challenge what the Department of Interior, BLM, the Bureau of Land Management, is doing. So you have different interests putting pressure on the BLM. It seems, however, that the ranchers, especially in Nevada and some other states, are being run out. They can't make money at it. Because if you put certain restrictions on it in terms of size, number of cattle that you can graze, at some point, it just isn't profitable. You have certain fixed costs that you got to cover, and that requires a certain size herd. And if you can't graze that herd on your ranch, you need government land to make it go. And they're putting restrictions on the number of cattle you can actually graze on the land. You pressure out ranchers. And I believe that this rancher in Nevada is one of the few remaining. There used to be dozens, not anymore. They've all given up. So if you're wondering why your beef prices are going up, the main reason is the drought. No ifs, ands, or buts about that. However, part of the problem is the way our government is managing these government public lands, and the cattle ranchers need the lands to graze their cattle because it takes a lot of land because you got to move the cattle around. If you leave them in one spot, they're going to decimate the plant life and not recover. You want to rotate or move around the herd so it doesn't eat all the plant life in an area so it has time to recover. And it also takes water. So a combination, if you have overgrazing, namely too much cattle on a given land area, and if you combine that with a drought that's killing the plants, you have a formula for disaster. And we're in a disaster in the sense the herds are the smallest total in the United States for the last over 60 years. And that's why your beef prices are going higher and higher and higher. And it probably will continue until the drought is over. You know, we've gotten some rain in Texas, but the lakes are way low. And the big drought is in California. But it's all over. Some areas, they don't have a problem. You can't generalize it's just the drought because some areas are doing fine. Others are being hard hit. It's a case-by-case situation, a state-by-state situation. And it really depends on how much rain we get. You have a rainy season. Usually it's February, March, April, maybe going into May. But once you're into June, July, and August, you're not going to see rain. Occasionally, you're going to get a thunderstorm. But most of your rainfall, at least in the area I am, is in the spring, in February, March, and April. And that's throughout Texas. And we have drought conditions. That's why there have been restrictions placed on people in various cities in the Texas, Dallas County area on how many days a week you can water your lawn. And they're very strict on this, and the fines are very heavy because watering your lawn takes a lot of water. And most of them are saying either one or two times a week maximum. Now, as long as you have rain, it's not critical, but it's in the summer months that this is, you know, a lot of lawns are going to die, even with the watering, because it gets very, very hot, and if you don't have the occasional drenching of a thunderstorm, I've seen it where all the grass is brown, and you have fires on the range, a lot of fires, because it's hot, and all that material, it only takes a small spark, and it goes up in flames. So you need to connect the dots between what the government is doing to you, and it's not affecting not only ranchers, but it's affecting the consumers in terms of prices that they pay at the grocery store for meat. And it's not just meat. It's dairy products, chicken, for example. So I wish the farmers and ranchers well. I hope they have a good crop, a good growth in the herd, but they need rain, a lot of rain. We're not going to get back, the lakes aren't going to go back to normal, but if we don't get some relief, your food prices are going to continue to go up because it's going to be in the fall and next spring before the rain comes again, and hopefully we get a drenching because we really need it, because this drought is severe, and it's not in one state, it's in many states. And you would think that the Bureau of Land Management would do its primary, well, one of its jobs, namely to manage this wild horse and burro program and get it down to their own AML, appropriate management level, and get those horses sold instead of burning through taxpayer money feeding these wild horses. If you can't sell them to people that want to raise their horses, then sell them abroad to either Mexicans or Chinese or whoever that wants to make them horse meat, or they, some of them probably need the horses. So there's a business opportunity, but you need to get on the stick. Now, the environmentalists will be all up in arms about this. Oh, and I'll show you nice, pretty pictures of wild horses. But they don't tell you it's affecting your price of meat, and they don't show you what these wild horses do in ranges in terms of just eating all the plant life, so you can't see any green. And remember, these are wild horses. They're not pets, folks. They might look pretty galloping across the range, but we have a whole bunch of them. We have at least 27,000 plus an excess of another 13,000 plus, not to mention the 50,000 that are in feedlots. So this problem needs to be looked into, and I'm glad that the Bureau of Land Management did the wise thing and backed off, because it was getting, as more and more people come in, the law enforcement was becoming outnumbered, because the word went out and the American people across the country, primarily though Nevada and Utah, came to the defense of this rancher. And I'm glad they stood up and told the federal government what they think of the program. See, what amazes me is just the sheer cost of rounding up 300 head. They brought in, and it wasn't just the roundup, they hired cowboys as contractors to do that, and helicopters. But is the bringing in supposedly upwards of 200 law enforcement, believing, and they were right, they were going to have a problem, and they did have a problem. I don't know what's going through the leadership of this organization's head, but they knew that they were going to get some pushback. And they got it. They got it. So the American people are waking up to the fact that you have the government trying to push around ranchers or American citizens across the country, and they're not going to stand for it. Now, there's another story I want to at least highlight, because some of you I know get your taxes in early, but I know as I'm speaking, many of you are still filling out your tax returns, and I'm going to have a special show on this. I'm not sure when, on what I call my Fair Tax Less program, which is based on the fair tax proposals, and there's an organization called fairtax.org that I'd recommend you go to. We need to eliminate the federal income tax, and I'm going to, on another show, going to go over that. But what was on the Drudge report today, and he, for those that are unfamiliar with Drudge, most of your major newspapers, as well as television news shows, as well as many in talk radio, I would say almost everybody in talk radio, one of the first things they do every day when they come into work is they get what's called in the business read in. Whether you're a commentator, which I am, I give my opinions and commentary on breaking news stories or news stories that have happened recently, is I get read in to see, okay, what are the major stories today? And I go to Drudge, and most people do. This website gets over a million hits a day. Now, if you're not a news junkie, you probably don't go to it. But I am a news junkie in the sense that I need to get a sense of what are the major stories in the papers. And I do that by going to Drudge Report, because he has links to the leading stories across the country. So I can quickly see by the headline what the subject matter is, click on it, and read it one or more articles on the story that's in the news. So it's a very good service that he does, and I'm well aware of it. I think he needs a little bit more recognition, because a lot of people really don't credit him. they'll go to the Drudge Report and make like they've suddenly discovered this. And I'm somewhat guilty of it myself. But many times I've been preparing this show and decided to highlight one of the stories on the Drudge Report. But before I do, I listen to some of the talk shows, and I would say about 9 times out of 10, they're talking about one of the stories that Drudge is highlighting. And sometimes they tip their hat or give credit to Drudge. Sometimes they don't. Now, to be fair to everybody, I don't rely just on Drudge. I go to other places to look. Yeah, I'll see what AP is sending out, for example. But there are other sources to see what's breaking and what people are paying attention to. And that's when I became aware last week of what was happening in Nevada, as well as what's happening in Utah in terms of the wild horses. Now, what I do, once I have an article and I'm interested in it, I will develop it in the sense that I'll get additional information. For example, I had to dig out these numbers on what AML, the appropriate management level. But I also ran across a number of videos by ranchers and people in the area explaining the problems. And I provide you with those videos. And I encourage you, if you have the time, to review one or more of them. I also link this story to the food price situation. It's been noticeable, especially in March. Suddenly, milk is going up from $2 to, see where I buy it, to the regular price today is $2.99 in Dallas. I'm sure in some parts of the country it's higher than that. But also meat prices. Now, I don't eat much beef. I need to say that. I primarily eat turkey, tuna, chicken, lean meats. And that's just my preference, my decision. And I made that decision a long time ago. It's not that I won't eat beef. I'm just not a regular eater of beef. You know, occasionally I might go to a fast food restaurant if I'm on a business trip and need to quickly eat something and run. Or if I'm on a trip and a client takes me out or I take a client out, I'll eat a steak, whatever. But that's the exception, and it's a rare exception, because I'm no longer in the financial services industry, nor am I. I used to be in the defense industry, where we'd have business trips, and we would take out the customer, or vice versa. And it would eat, usually a steak was fairly typical. Sometimes I'd eat fish, because we'd go into a good restaurant, the corporation is paying for it, so people have a good meal. Now it's becoming more and more expensive. And I'm going to keep track of this because right now we're just in the early stages. A lot depends on how much rain we get in the next couple of weeks as to how this is going to affect food prices. People are not, for example, buying apples, vegetables, because the prices have gone up. And I've seen it. And now what's one of the other reasons besides the fact of the drought? And this needs to be said, because what else has been going up in price? And you've probably seen it. The price of gasoline. In Dallas, it's gone up from $3.30 to $3.60, or, you know, $3.59.9, but call it $3.60. From $3.30 to $3.60 in the last, not even 2 months, in the last 4 or 5 weeks. It's bounced around for a while, going up and down. Now it's spiked up. That's a 10% increase. You see, ladies and gentlemen, supply and demand for gasoline and supply and demand of petroleum is not really what's determining the price you pay at the pump. What we've had now for a number of years, and I really think of this as one of the crimes of the century, is we had rule changes on the futures market. You see, at one time, and I'm all for speculation if it's regulated, no more than 30% of the contracts on total in terms of future contracts for a commodity, including petroleum, could be someone that would be classified as a speculator. In other words, they're not either a producer or user of petroleum. A user of petroleum, for example, would be refineries or airliners that need certain fuels. But refineries, they need the petroleum to produce not only gasoline, but other products, including petrochemicals. That was determined strictly on supply and demand, because you need some speculation to make the market liquid. Well, those rules have gone by the board now for a number of years. What's the situation today? The overwhelming majority of contracts that are being bought and sold on the futures contract markets for commodities, including petroleum, are done by speculators that they don't produce nor do they use the commodity. They're strictly speculators. And what are they speculating on? The future price of that commodity. Not the spot price, but the future price. But what's driving the spot price that you pay at the pump is those future prices. So upwards of 80 to 90% are now done by speculation. Now, in the past, the reason why they regulated the number of contractors that speculators could have, what their position was, they found that where you have a situation where speculators dominate the market, you have very volatile prices. And they more or less determine the day-by-day prices that you pay, for example, at the pump for gasoline. They're flipping contracts is what they're doing. And they're making a lot of money. This could be stopped with a phone call and going back to the old system, but it's not. And the reason it's not is because there are huge fortunes being made here. Huge fortunes. These people make major contributions to both political parties to make sure the rules stay exactly the way they are. You see, our politicians of both parties are bought and paid for. Now, there's some in both parties that are aware of the situation and that would like to go back to it, but can't, because this is not easy to explain. I've tried on more than one occasion, and I'm not going to get in the weeds to this, but the point I'm trying to make, if you're complaining about the high gasoline prices, the reason is excessive speculation in commodity contracts, future contracts for commodities, including petroleum. It's not just petroleum, though. And until you get back to the old regulation regime that you had, you're going to have prices that are above $3. Do I need to remind you? Well, in Dallas, for example, when Barack Obama became president, the price of a gallon of gasoline was about $1.85. $1.85. Today, it's more than double that. It's more than double that. And in many parts of the country, it's way over $3.60. It's $4 or more. Because what the states have done, they make a lot of money on the taxes on gasoline. So many states have much higher taxes on gasoline. And what do they contribute? Actually, nothing. They just are with their hand out, socking it to you. Now, the story I was going to at least touch upon is the fact that since President Obama has been president, not only have your gasoline prices gone up and your food prices has gone up, he has proposed over the last 5 years, proposed is the operative word, over 442 tax hikes. Now, that doesn't mean he got them all, nor does it include the 20 tax hikes that are part of Obamacare. If you add those, you're over 262 proposed tax hikes. He didn't get them all. He got the Obamacare tax hikes in, and you're paying for it, and you will be paying for it until the Republicans oust from the White House Obama. Hopefully, that'll happen in 2017. So we still have a little less than 3 years, and you're going to have to wait, because what President Obama is, he's a tax and spend, actually he's a tax spend and print money kind of guy. He wants to grow the government. He doesn't want to limit the size of the government. He wants to redistribute wealth. He doesn't want to create more wealth. He wants to divide the pie up and transfer it from one group of people to his friends. That's what he's about. And many people, both on the left and on the right, are waking up to that. I knew what he was about back in 2008. But everyone was suckered into hope and change. And now we're going on 5 years, actually it's going on 6 years, where we've had persistently high unemployment above 6%. The unemployment rate today is just a tenth of a point less than the day he walked into the White House. His economic policies have been a failure. a big failure. And so has Obamacare. It is impacting the job situation. And now to add insult to injury, our food prices are going up. Now, he can't control the weather, but there are things he can do, like he could get the price of gasoline way down, but he's not going to do it. Why? Who are the major contributors to both political parties? In this instance, those in the financial services industry primarily. He can make a phone call and push the Democrats to change the regulation. He's not going to do that, though. He'd be cutting his throat. Why? Who are the major contributors to both the Republican and Democratic Party? It's Wall Street or the financial sector, primarily investment banks as well as commercial banks that speculate in the futures contract markets. And there are other people, hedge funds as well. No one is looking out for the American worker or the American people. And that's a very sad commentary on the current situation, or status quo, if you will, of divided government in Washington. The American people are not being listened to, nor are their concerns the concern of the so-called political elite or ruling class in Washington, D.C. They're simply not. Because if they were concerned about the American people, gas prices would be under $2. Not $3.60, under $2. Under $2. And would we be opening up the government lands to oil and natural gas exploration and development? Most, if not all, of the increased output of oil and natural gas are a result of development, exploration and development on private land. Even though Obama likes to take credit for it, that we become an export nation, it's on private land. We need both pipelines and permits being issued across the board so private firms can tap into the energy resources on these government lands. And remember, in most of these states, it's somewhere between 40 and over 80% of the land is owned by the United States government. What the United States government needs to do is auction off that land to get revenues to hopefully pay down the debt. I would like to see that. No one, that is very remote. I need to, you know, I'm not living in a fantasy land. Given the existing leadership, you're not going to see the national debt go down. You're not going to see unfunded liabilities go down. There's no will. There's no vision. There's no courage. There's no understanding of the simple urgency that needs to take place to turn this around. I'm still convinced the United States can be turned around, and I'm talking about primarily the economy, if the government, the federal government, as well as state governments, are downsized. But that is not what the professional career politician wants to do. There are very few professional career politicians that are against the status quo and for the American people. Because if there were, would you be filling out your tax returns today? No, you wouldn't. Because there has been several attempts over the years to go to either a flat tax, an income tax, which at one time I supported, or, which I think is much better, for a number of reasons, the fair tax, where you're taxed when you buy new goods and services. Because whether you know it or not, I use this example over and over to keep it real simple. When you buy a $1 loaf of bread, in that loaf of bread, in the price of the loaf of bread, you have approximately 23 cents of taxes. Income taxes, both personal, corporate, as well as payroll taxes for Social Security, Medicare, and disability, for example. They're embedded or part of the price, and it has to be covered. Why? You and business owners have paid those taxes. So the cost of doing business includes the taxes. So you could replace the income tax system we have today with a broad-based consumption tax called a fair tax. I call it fair tax less, where it's less because the fair tax people, they made a number of mistakes. One of them was their proposal was net revenue neutral. It would replace existing revenues. I think the federal government needs to be drastically cut back in size, as well as the tax rates go down, So I would be in favor of a, to start out with, but eventually go down, of a 20% fair tax or fair tax less tax. So when you buy your loaf of bread, included in, just like you do today, you'd be charged a dollar, but in the dollar, 20 cents in that dollar will go to the federal government. What that means is the corporate income tax would be done away with. Your personal income taxes would be done away with. Your payroll, your Social Security, Medicare, disability taxes would be done away with. In other words, the fair tax is a replacement tax. It's an entirely new system based on consumption of goods, not when you earn income. Because the reason why your tax returns are becoming increasingly, if not possible, impossible to fill out is the sheer complexity of the Internal Revenue Code as well as the volumes of regulations that go with it. No one really understands the entire system. No one does. You're lucky if you're an expert on one part. And what happens is every year the American people are spending anywhere from $300 billion to $500 billion, and maybe even more, in not only complying with the law, in other words, filling out their tax returns, as well as doing tax planning and research to avoid taxes. Well, if we went to a broad-based consumption tax system, no one would be filling out a tax return, point one. We would immediately save billions, hundreds of billions of dollars. That's just one reason to do that. The second reason is, and that means you don't fill out any tax return. In other words, April 15th would be a normal day. You wouldn't be staying up late into the night to make sure your return is right. Now, I know some of you people do this in late January or early February, fine. But if you're a business owner, for example, you know what I'm talking about. You spend hours, if not days, trying to make sure you get the right amount paid to the government. This system is over 100 years old. It's time that we retired the income tax and replace all federal taxes with a broad-based consumption tax, the fair tax less. Tomorrow I can't do it, but Wednesday I'm going to definitely, since all tomorrow's the 15th, so I'll know many of you won't be listening, but on the following day I'm going to give a highlight or a summary of my fair tax less plan. Because it has a lot of advantages. One of the big advantages, it encourages people to save their money. Because if they save their money, they're not taxed. It's only when they consume or spend their money are they taxed. And they can, and people that save, what do? They invest their money, and their investments are not taxed when they sell them, including your homes. There'll be no capital gains tax, no tax on interest. All of that will be replaced by one tax, the fair tax less. And it's a 20% tax on everybody. And the one thing I need to say before I wrap it up, one of the objections you'll get from anyone that is smart in this area, well, sales taxes are the most regressive tax. You'll hear that criticism. Yes, I understand that. That's why both the fair tax and my fair tax less plan, which I've slightly changed, would give every month a check. And it could be transferred electronically. The government would write you a check, every individual, if you're a family of four, for four checks of $500 each as a rebate. What it's a rebate of? People in low income spend the majority of their income on the necessities of life. So rather, when people go to the checkout, have certain goods that are exempt, all goods and services, new goods and services, would be taxed because we've rebated to everybody the taxes on the necessities of life, including food, clothing, shelter, a roof over your head, and some transportation costs, namely gasoline. So every man, woman, and child would each get $500 a month or $6,000 a year, and that is a tax rebate. And that's how simple it is. And it is simple. And most people like the idea. Now, one of the mistakes, I think, that the Fair Tax Organization said, we would not go to this tax until we repeal the income tax amendment. Ladies and gentlemen, that is never going to happen. And they'll say, well, the danger is we could end up with both. No, we don't. Because when we go to this system, and remember, this is not a new tax. It replaces all these other taxes. Corporate income, personal income, capital gains, alternative minimum taxes, your payroll taxes, your gift taxes, your estate taxes. All of those federal taxes would be totally done away with. So your gross pay would be your net pay. In other words, if your gross is $1,000 a week, that's what you take home. No more withholding, no more payroll taxes. But you got to remember, whenever you consume something, you will be paying a 20% tax that is included in the price of the bread today. It is in the price of anything you buy today. And it's estimated to be about 23%. I would start at a lower rate at 20. So prices won't be going up. As a matter of fact, some of them should be going down. And all the retailers have to do is send 20% of whatever. If let's say you just buy a loaf of bread, 20 cents would go to the federal government. The retailers would be collecting it and submitting it like they do today on sales taxes. But instead of going to the state, it goes to the federal government. And the big advantage of it is it encourages savings. It encourages job growth. It encourages investment and money. Literally trillions of dollars that U.S. corporations have abroad would be coming back into the United States. Why? There would be no taxes on capital. Because investments are not taxed, and there's no tax on labor. The tax is on consumption. We would be unique in the world with this. And what would happen to the U.S. economy? It would boom. It would explode into prosperity. We'd have a new age, a peace and prosperity economy. A renaissance, if you will. Now, why don't we have it? There's tons of special interest, and they buy politicians, and they want the status quo the way it is, even though everyone complains that this tax system is inefficient, it's costly, and it's costing growth. With that, I'll sign off, and until tomorrow at 4, you have been listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas. We are the voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of anyone at KDUX, Richland College, or the DCCD. Thank you for listening, and now back to the music.